Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages. It says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The entire book's available for free to download and read. Or if you're really industrious and want a hard copy in your hands, you can go to Amazon and usually find one that's used, that's for sale. They're no longer in print, but there are used copies available. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. It's called the Reality Management Worksheet. And it's a tool that I've been using to great advantage for over 16 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and manage my emotions and turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has access to. And if you do that, print off the worksheet that's available as a PDF file absolutely free. Try it out, fill in the blanks. Anytime there's an upsetting situation in your life and an upset that you generate in response to a situation in your life, then give us a call if you have comments or questions. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. There's also a whole host of audio files available for free download and repeated listening that contain shows just like this one, where people called in and asked questions about this, actually got stepped through the process of doing a worksheet, or asked clarifying questions or gave testimonials about how the active use of the worksheet has been a tremendous benefit in their life. So if you do that, as we hope you do, then we encourage you to give us a call with your comments and questions. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. It'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce it by your area code. And the other thing we're doing this year is we're working through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. Today is the 125th day of the year, and today's lesson reads, In quiet, I receive love's word today. In quiet, I receive the Creator's word today. Let this day be a day of stillness and of quiet listening. Your Creator wills you to hear its word today. It calls to you from deep within your mind where it abides. Hear it today. No peace is possible until its word is heard around the world, until your mind, in quiet listening, accepts the message that the world must hear to usher in the quiet time of peace. This world will change through you. No other means can save it, for the Creator's plan is simply this. The offspring of creation is free to save him or herself, given the word of the Creator to be his guide, forever in his or her mind and at his or her side to lead them surely to their Creator's house by the Creator's will, forever free as a creation. He or she is not led by force and only by love. He or she is not judged, but only sanctified. In stillness, we hear the Creator's voice today without intrusion of our petty thoughts, without our personal desires, and without all judgment of the Creator's holy word. We will not judge ourselves today, for what we are cannot be judged. We will stand apart from all judgments which the world has laid upon the offspring of creation. The world does not know the offspring of creation. Today we will not listen to the world, but wait in silence for the word of the Creator. Hear the Creator speak. Its voice would give to you its holy word to spread across the world the tidings of salvation and the holy time of peace. We gather at the place of creation today, the quiet place where within the mind creation abides forever, and in the wholeness that creation created and will never leave. Creation does not wait until your return to your mind to him to give its word to you. Creation has not hidden itself from you while you have wandered off a little while from it. It does not cherish the illusions which you hold about yourself. It knows its offspring, and it wills that he and she remain as part of it, regardless of its dreams, regardless of his or her madness, that his or her will be done rather than the will of creation. Today, creation speaks to you. Three times today, at times most suitable for silence, give 10 minutes set apart for listening to the word of the Creator. It is your voice to which you listen as creation speaks to you. It is your word he speaks. It is the word of freedom and peace, of unity of will and purpose, with no separation nor division in the single mind of the Creator and its offspring. In quiet, listen to your higher self today, and let it tell you creation has never left its offspring, and you have never left your true self. Only be quiet. You will need no rule but this to let your practicing today lift you above the thinking of the world and free your vision from the body's eyes. Only be still and listen. You will hear the words, the true word, in which the will of creation and its offspring joins the will of the Father and are at one with it, with no illusions interposed between the holy, indivisible, and true. As every hour passes by today, be still a moment and remind yourself you have a special purpose for this day, in quiet, to receive the word of creation, to receive the word of love. In quiet, I receive love's word today. And we're also working through Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment. And her chapter 25 is titled, Invincible Mario, Here I Come. She quotes Koji Kondi, co-creator of Super Mario Brothers, who said, We were trying to create something that had never been done before. Pam writes, if I remain eye to eye with a problem, I will continue to fight it. If I stubbornly refuse to budge from the level of my alleged difficulty, we, both the difficulty and me, will continue knocking the living daylights out of each other. In lesson 125, in quiet, I receive love's word today. I learned to resolve my issues with a different approach. Instead of staring down my own issues, I channel Nintendo's Super Mario, who completes his mission by jumping to higher levels. When I duck into secret coin rooms and other quiet places, I'm able to confront my stuff from an elevated perspective. When I recognize my true nature as love in the highest level possible, my opponents are less daunting. Why would I want to duke it out? From the highest level, solutions, answers, and revelations just show up. And I discover they were within me all of the time. 10 minutes, three separate times today. In quiet, I receive love's word today. So, we have someone with a hand up already. Area code 847, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, this is Cindy, and I used to live up there, and now I live in Knoxville, Tennessee, so I guess that makes me from Knoxville now. Thank you for reading that. That was really refreshing and nice. I like the thing about the Mario. That's kind of fun because you could just see the little character jumping up and up and up, and that's a great visual to have. So thank you for sharing that with us. I have something going on in my life. I can't really talk too much about the details of it, but it's become quite disturbing to me. And it's causing me to have some anxiety. I've been tapping and doing some worksheets on it and breathing. I feel frustrated that there's so much good for me here in my life, and yet I have this issue and this incident that is not so great that I feel like is dragging me down, but I'm still looking at all the good there is. Maybe I'm looking for a suggestion how I can integrate the thing that's not so great.
Well, the first thing is to begin to talk about it without the denial. And the denial in your statement is there's this thing that is so frustrating. There's this thing that is so irritating. And in truth, it is not the thing that is frustrating or irritating. It's just a thing. And I am generating frustration and irritation about it. So that would be the beginning.
Okay.
So if you went back and listened to the tape, you would hear yourself talking about this thing and externalizing it and describing it as something that is causing irritation and frustration for you and making it difficult for you to enjoy your time there and the other good things there. So the beginning of this for anyone who calls in this work is to recognize that what I say, even if I think it without saying it, the structure and the format of the words as they come together for me will reveal to me my levels of denial and my stuck points. So I'm generating a lot of frustration and a lot of irritation about a situation that happened. So that's the beginning. And then, of course, we have this set of tools that would have me do the worksheet. And in the worksheet process, I would just map out what is it that happened, who do I think is the trigger, what's the emotion I'm feeling, the frustration or irritation, what is it that my mind is telling me needs to happen in order for this to get better or for me to be able to move past this or enjoy my time in Tennessee without this. And then understand that the only way for me to get access to the part of my mind that's actually creating all of this upset and frustration is to cancel the goal I have for this person or this situation or for myself in this particular case. And then work through the worksheet process and ask to be shown the hidden part of your mind. So that's where I would begin. And it might be that, you know, this person or this dynamic, this situation you're in really is in the wrong, that the other person is really doing something that's illegal or immoral or rude or insulting. But if I don't clear up the negative emotional energies in me before I decide how to respond to that situation or that person, I'm never going to see it clearly enough to add an energy which will be productive, and I'll never move through it in a way that leaves me feeling better.
Okay. Whew, I'm going to work on that. Thank you.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that happens to us as we do work like this, and I know from your calls over the years that you are working at this stuff. You are working on yourself. You're working on your fears. You're working on your irritations. You're working on the unproductive relationship patterns from your past. And one of the things that happens to all of us on this path as we're working is, and this is, it's woven into the Way of Mastery where it says in the fifth lesson, here are the keys to the kingdom. And it says, if you do these first four keys, your life is going to get better. You're going to feel stronger. You're going to feel healthier. You're going to reap the benefits of being in a better position in your life and relationships. And that's why the fifth key is so necessary. The fifth key is humility. Because if I don't recognize that I didn't even create myself and I don't know when I was created, the temptation is going to be there increasingly for me to take credit for how much better my life is going, for me to think, well, this can't be, I can't be creating this upset because I've really done a lot of work on myself and I'm really very spiritual and I'm very forgiving for most people, but this son of a gun, right, this situation, and so this might be one of the places where because you've hit a new level of vitality, you've moved from one state to another, there's so much good there for you, and you might be thinking, wow, this is great. My life's going to be moving forward, and so your vitality gets raised to a new level, and then your unconscious says, oh, good, Cindy, now you can get rid of some of this deeper trauma that you didn't have the vitality to process out before. And here comes a life situation, or here comes a person, or here comes an internal dynamic within yourself that you haven't been aware of maybe for decades, maybe for weeks or months. And you get triggered. And if you fall into the trap of trying to figure it out, or you fall into the trap of thinking, well, this can't be mine because I've done all this work, then you get stuck.
Okay, that makes sense, and I've caught myself in the past few days getting stuck, getting triggered, and falling into old patterns, and then I found that I was just being hard on myself about it and just kind of, like, frustrated and disgusted with myself, but then I was able to tap through that, and that lessened, so that was good. But yeah, I'm just going to keep working with it and keep canceling goals for the situation I'm in. And I just have to put my big girl pants on and deal with it.
Well, and as I dismantle the anger, the fear, the frustration, the hurt and resentment that comes up in my system from taking 100% responsibility for all of it, whether I'm doing the reality management worksheet or I'm doing a targeted journaling exercise that Michael calls the mind shifter, the more I clear that stuff out of my system and my immediate consciousness, the broader and the clearer is the picture that I get shown about my current situation and my role in it. And then I've got all kinds of different ways to intervene and move forward. So it might be that there's something significant that someone down there or someone in your life or someone, you know, back here is doing that is unacceptable, that doesn't fit your values and your ethics and your morals and your priorities, and you may need to either step away from them or you may need to hold them accountable. However, if you try and do that from a perspective where your anger is up or your frustration is up or your fear or your hurt is up, it's not going to go well.
Yes, I have been working with things, and I see my role in what has been going on. The thing that concerns me is that there's a lot of money involved, and that is, I think, the most pressing thing, like the most concerning to me. So I'm going to have to work with that and see how I can work through that aspect of it.
Well, and do all of the emotional work around the money, right? So how many times in your life has money been an issue for which there's been a lot of intense emotions? And so, you know, if it's happening again, whether, you know, like a lot of people, the vast majority of people in our culture, the way it is with the division of wealth, et cetera, the vast majority of people are struggling to make enough to pay the bills and or to live independently and or to be, you know, have that feeling of safety and security or to have everything they want. And so we attach a lot of beliefs and therefore emotions to that dynamic of our career and our income and our savings and our stability. So the first thing to do is identify the emotions you're feeling around it and clear those up before you make a decision about how to proceed.
Okay. Yes, I'm going to work with that. Thank you.
All right. Anything else we can do to support you today?
No, I think that is good. I'm going to work with those things and see what comes up for me.
All right. Well, it's good to hear your voice again. Congratulations on the move, and I'll look forward to updates as you see fit to share them.
Okay, thank you.
All right, blessings. Area code 480, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Oh, yes.
Area...
Hi. Tim.
Hi, who do we have?
This is Cecilia.
Well, hello, Cecilia. How are you?
Hey. It's like I can't I want to put a word to it. I'm amazed at how this work is healing a tooth issue. Okay, let's just put that. So yeah, and I'm doing these worksheets on it, and I thought yesterday, which I'm not an allopathic person in any way, shape, or form, that I don't know what I'm going to do, and I might cancel the thought. I had to keep canceling the thought that I was going to have to do allopathic work. And I woke up this morning and there's no pain. There is swelling on the part of my space between my bottom of my nostrils and the top of my lip. Not a lot, but it's not, but it's, it feels like it's moving out. The energy is moving out. So what I want to say is, because I've been, Jeannie helped me with a worksheet, not on this, but on honoring and respecting myself. I realized that I wasn't 99.9% of my life, I was not looking after myself. I was not getting my teeth into things. I was not, this is all metaphysical related to the teeth, I was not getting a grip on my life. Everything was just the opposite of that. And now that I'm doing the worksheets, I did a worksheet on my teeth. I can't even, like, tell you what a difference night and day it is with my teeth. The issue came up 3 days ago. I did a worksheet for 3 days now. And this morning I woke up and I don't even, I mean, it's like remnants of it still leaving. And I really truly believe in the energy, the medicine of energy, okay? This is like I am experiencing it firsthand, how this is the way to go for me. And I just wanted to say thanks for holding a space for me to learn this. And I'm just really grateful. I just wanted to share that with your work.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad it's working so well for you. And if you're like most of us, you want to keep doing that work and you want to make the best use possible of whatever the allopathic medical world can give you. So there are times when, you know, if you have an infection, you might be able to use natural substances that are antiseptic and antibiotic and work through it. But there might also be times when you'd be better served taking an antibiotic and letting that be part of the healing work you're doing with the worksheets and the forgiveness work and the reality management worksheets, the targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter, and the breath work and the EFT tapping. All of these things can work together beautifully with what traditional medicine, or not traditional, but our conventional medicine would offer. So I'm glad you're finding good benefit, and I'm grateful for the call to share the testimonial. Is there anything else in specific?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes. So I look in the archives and listen to radio shows sometimes, and I noticed one time, maybe a week ago, the caption in red, Jeannie must have put it in red, on three of your shows about Patricia Evans, the verbally abusive relationship. And so that caught my eye because I had worked with Patricia Evans on a marriage I was in for 10 years. And I got every one of her books. I didn't have the mind energy to even absorb what she was saying, but I knew how bad I felt in this relationship. And I listened to your podcast, and I'm like, wow, this is so amazing. And so, you know, my book is right there, you know, the verbally abusive relationship in my other room, and I picked it up. I haven't picked it up since I divorced my ex-husband in 2017. And Patricia Evans helped me in every way, shape, and form. She was the one that told me that, on an average, the partner that's doing the verbal abuse usually lists the partner that's in a relationship with a verbally abusive person lists, you know, all of these statements that they've heard throughout the relationship. And she said there's normally 50 is a large amount. She said you had 500. I'm thinking, is 500 bad? You know, I just didn't want to face it. And anyway, the good news is thank you for bringing it up. it's a horrible, debilitating situation, and I just, it's bringing up more stuff that I'm dealing with it again, but I can deal with it now. And what I want to say.
So breathe. Okay, breathe.
Okay. I didn't understand it. I don't understand, though, how I could have come from reality one and gone to reality two to have the empathy. And I thought I had it for him, but I didn't have a witness when I was a child, and I was verbally abused for my whole life. Never, ever told anything nice. And that's why I thought we would make a good match, and that's why I got involved with it with him. But he, no. And I'm beginning to understand what happened. It's like a nightmare reading that book right now. I mean, a good nightmare that I'm working through some things now that I can. But I'm just saying that the list that she had me write of all these things, it was a contract, okay? And I had written down all this paper, and she said, do it in front of the lawyer and yada, 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 and say these things on a tape to him and read your contract. And I did. I said, it's not okay for you to define my body, and you're not allowed to tell me who I am and yada, yada, yada. And there were so many lists of things that he said that I was reading out loud according to her. I needed to do that because I felt safe doing it with a lawyer there. Anyway, never criticized me, you know, and I mean, these are responses. I didn't even get to the book about the responses even to this day, but I didn't have the ability to, at that time, so I thought, to speak up. And as Jeannie and Michael are helping me through, that's a huge, like a core issue in my life. And so I honor and respect what I'm saying now, and I honor and respect my life now with the help of the worksheets that I've been doing with Jeannie and Michael. And so I could say these things, but also with Michael's mind shifter, I realized that these are things I need to say to myself, which is honor and respect my body. Honor and respect what I say, you know. I mean, so I mean that was in a codependent video that I watched that said to do that with everything that you advise you give to somebody else. So with the 500 things that I wrote down that I was told that were verbally abusive, throughout the 10 years of being with him, I'm going to get that list out now, and I'm going to read those things, and I'm going to reword it into honor that me here, honor who I am, honor, you know, and put it in positive terms instead of she had me put it in like, don't you ever say that I'm a bitch.
So take a breath,
yeah.
Julia.
Yeah.
And let me explain for the people listening that.
Okay.
And when I ask you to take a breath, you don't have to, but it would really be beneficial if you take a nice deep breath, hold it at the top for a second or two, and then resist the exhale so it's 4 to 8 times longer. So breathe gently, slowly, as I mentioned this. You're talking about using one of Michael's tools, which is the knowledge about regulatory speech. And regulatory speech has two aspects. One aspect of it is that what I say, there's a part of my mind that actually listens to whatever I say. So if I say and I think in my thoughts, I'm an idiot, it's all my fault, etc., there's a part of my mind that gets programmed by that thought or that statement and programmed into believing it. So there's a part of my speech which regulates, which programs my mind to believe what I think over and over again. there's another part of my speech that is a revelation to me of what's being hidden in my mind, in my subconscious and unconscious. And if I learn to listen to my speech and understand that it will always reveal to me what's truly in my belief system, then I can use it to decide what my next piece of work might need to be. So the regulatory speech that you're talking about would call me to say, if I have somebody who is being verbally abusive to me, and I talk to them about their verbal abuse to me, and I keep talking about how they're insulting me and they're hurting me, I program my mind to believe that they really are hurting me and that is really an outside force creating my emotions. And I'm focusing on all those things I don't want and adding energy to them. So in this work, we know it's far more beneficial for me to speak of and focus on what I do want. I want you to speak to me lovingly, gently, and with respect. I want you to honor your commitments. I want you to, and so I'm focusing on the things I want. I'm adding my mind energy to the positive things. And that is much more beneficial in the energetic exchange and in the long run in my life, I'll see benefits. So that's what you're talking about doing if you rewrite those statements or if you rewrite that contract that you were talking about from the positive perspective, it might be beneficial that way. It'll at least help you keep your mind energy on what you want to create and isolate the energy that you've been focusing on all those things you didn't like and that you don't want to have continue. So, how are you feeling? What's the breath work doing, and what else can we support you with today?
The breath work is very helping a lot because I can get into the story in my head and it replays in loops and loops and loops, and I don't usually hear what anybody else is saying, but I've been doing the breath work. It's calming. It's very nice. It's very peaceful, and I'm going to get more accustomed to that space of holding that space for myself and for other people.
So is there something specifically that we can support you with today?
With the verbally abusive thing, I also want to ask you if you're hearing that I believe that he was a mirror for all the 500 things that I've been told my whole life. He said every one of them. So he mirrored them to me at the same time because I did not come from reality too, which means that somebody acknowledged my abuse and witnessed and acknowledged that I wasn't making it up growing up. I never got that. He never got that for his abuse. But he seemed to stay in reality one. I was not in reality two, although I had compassion for others. I just didn't have it for myself, which meant that I didn't have it at all because what I'm trying to say is I believe that the law, I don't go into the law of attraction unless it's the way Michael Rice and you explain it, but I did attract him so that I could heal the stuff that I heard him say, which was really what I said, and I was programmed to believe was true about me.
Okay, and you know what I talk to people about with that is rather than saying I attracted this into my life, just acknowledge that if this arrives in my life, how I choose to interpret it and choose to respond to it is going to be far more powerful in creating my experience of life than anything else. So, you know, I don't know the truth of, am I attracting this? Is this some, you know, guardian angel or guide that's giving me this experience so I can learn this or that lesson? I don't know the absolute truth of any of that. What I do know from my own experience is how I choose to interpret and respond to those events is far more powerful in my creation of experience than the actual event. So if I say, hey, I woke up and I realized I was in an abusive pattern in a relationship. I woke up and realized I've got someone who insults me and who blames me for things and who treats me in a very abusive pattern. And then I wake up another level and say, oh my gosh, this is what I grew up with. I was raised by people who were so wounded that they couldn't acknowledge the strength and the beauty in the people around them because they were so insecure and so wounded themselves. Oh, well, now I've got these two places in my life, and then because I've awakened, I've awoken to experience this, and then I have the luck of coming across some tools, whether it's Byron Katie's work or Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method or the Christian Science work, or and I can actually step into a two-prong approach that has me reminding myself that I am a miracle of life expressing in form. I am a miracle as the creative force keeps my heart beating and digests my food and keeps my lungs breathing when I'm not even thinking about it. So I focus on that good. I focus on the truth of the miracle of life expressing in, through, as, and around me. And then I also focus on the negative thoughts and traumatic energies and patterns of interaction that I've downloaded over the years. And I apply specific tools, not designed to figure it out, but just apply the tool and go through the process. And in this work, Michael has seen the ancient Aramaic work, and the Course in Miracles talks about the need to cancel everything I think I want and ask to be shown something else. And if I'm willing to engage in that, I can turn whatever comes at me in life, whether I drew it to me or I attracted it or I have to face it because of karma, all of those things don't seem to add up to something useful in my mind, because if it's here, I just want to deal with it. I don't necessarily want to look at the theory about who's responsible for it being here and have great philosophical discussions about that, except on my vacation. But if I wake up and realize that that pattern is here and I'm in it in my life, and I just start using that two-prong approach to remind myself of my worthiness and my value simply because the Creator has put the breath of life in me, and the application of the tools that help me dismantle and see the false nature of every negative conclusion about myself, then things start to move. And my experience of life changes beyond what words can describe each new heartbeat. And that's what I would suggest you step into.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to listen to this podcast many, 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 many times, because this is more enlightening than where I was coming from, and I'm ready for it, and I really want to get this, but then that's probably not just letting go, and it's me trying to figure it out again, you know. But no, it was very helpful what you shared. So thank you very much for that.
You're very welcome and deserving, far more deserving than you yet realize, but that too shall come.
Thank you very much.
All right. Blessings. Thank you for the call. So we have 15 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We have 13 callers on the board and We have one person in the chat room. How can we support you? What would be of use? What would be most useful for you to have us discuss or question, or what's a suggestion you have for us? Today's a Wednesday, so we've got shows again tomorrow and Friday. We've got another support group coming up tomorrow night. We had a support group last night. Somebody did a very powerful worksheet in the beginning of that group, and then there was some very deep discussion about all of the changes and adaptations that each of us are called to make in a year like this, where the coronavirus restrictions are requiring adjustments to our schedules and our emotional lives. And so we have time to discuss some of that if you're interested, or you can suggest a completely different topic. Call-in number is 563-999-3581. And I saw that Matt Kahn, who is someone that we have brought into the support group a number of times and listened to some of his lectures, and he has books like Whatever Arises, Love That, and book titles like Everything is Here to Support You. And I noticed that he was giving a talk with one of my favorite topics as the title, and that is being gentle with yourself. And if you've listened to the podcast or any of my support groups, you'll hear that on a frequent basis. It is so counterproductive for me to beat myself up. It's okay for me to acknowledge that I've made an error, but that's not the same as creating a negative judgment about it and the negative emotions that go with that negative judgment. Area code 484, is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome. How can we support you today? What's your offering?
Well, I don't really have an offering. I could use your support, though. The other day we had a conversation, and I told you about a recurring nightmare that I used to have, and you suggested that I do a worksheet on that, and I was just wanting to get some help in coming up with the goal, because I got stuck there, and maybe it's because it wasn't a real-life situation, so it never really played all the way out, or I don't know. But I just feel like I need some help in constructing the goal of this worksheet.
Okay, well, so what's the emotion that you were aware of after the nightmare?
Devastating guilt.
Okay, so if nothing else, I mean, if you can get clear about the thought that is, you know, I'm taking a breath and backing up here for a minute, because this topic has come up a number of times on the show over the years. It's a topic of a lot of debate for people, and I just want to say before I get into this, my interest in this is to be of service. And there are many different ways to approach this. The most useful for me over the years is to approach it as though guilt is a thought or a constellation of negative thoughts about myself. Mm-hmm. And when I have the thought that I'm guilty, I did something bad or wrong, sometimes I generate with those thoughts an emotion of sadness. Sometimes I generate an emotion of emotional hurt. Sometimes I generate an emotion of anger at myself or someone else. So to begin there, it's okay if you want to do this worksheet where the emotion is guilt.
Okay,
however,
no, I mean, there's definitely other emotions because
it might benefit you to use that as the thought. The thought is, I'm guilty of, and then be specific about what. You don't have to share that with us on the show, But in the line 1D where it says my thoughts create my emotions, then just specifically write out my thought is I'm guilty of this.
Right. Okay.
And that's what's generating my emotion of sadness or my emotion of hurt or my emotion of anger at myself. Right?
Right.
And so then if it comes to it, if I've got a specific thought, like let's say, you know, I'm guilty of raging at someone who was innocent. Let's say that that's my thought. I'm guilty of raging at someone who was innocent, and I caused them great harm. That's my thought. Now, when I think that, I have deep sadness. So my emotion in the worksheet is sadness. What happens when C is me? What happened was I raged at somebody that didn't deserve it. And my thought is, I raged at them and when they didn't deserve it, and I've caused them great harm. Now, what would my goal be? You know, for the most effective worksheets, I want my goal to line up with the trigger 1C. So the goal in this worksheet would be for me to have done something differently, to, you know, control my anger, to
right.
be an allowance, be an acceptance, to treat people lovingly. It could be any of those goals. Now, if I have a nightmare that leaves me feeling agitated, sad, scared, and hurt, and I don't really know why, I don't have the specifics of the nightmare, I just woke up in a night terror and shaking, I can still do a worksheet on it where I say, I, Tim, who am love, I'm feeling this terror, this shakiness, this fear. And what happened? I had a nightmare. I don't remember the specifics. And what's my thought? My thought is, in this case, it might be the same as the goal. I want to feel calm. I want to feel safe. I want to feel better. And then the goal is, I want to feel better. And just
okay.
cancel that thought and goal and see what my mind serves up. And then as I do that, I'm opening myself to be shown a different part of my mind.
Okay, I got it.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So if I have specifics from the dream, I can fill out the worksheet as though the dream was an actual thing that happened. Where I remember what I did, I remember what I said, I remember the emotions on awaking, and I can, you know, do the worksheet as though, you know, my thought is that when I ran through that mall and shot all those people, it's caused devastation. And that's why I'm feeling this sadness and guilt. And then, you know, and it never happened, but it was in my dream. And then the goal is for me to always respect people and, you know, be somebody who helps people. And then I can cancel that goal and cancel that thought and see what happens. What part of my mind gets revealed.
Or couldn't the goal, even if you remember what happened in the dream, to still recognize your innocence?
Sure. Yeah.
As opposed
yeah, your goal.
To something that happened in the dream.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
and,
where I
and,
think
and
we're
the
getting
beauty...
caught up in.
Well, and the beauty of the worksheet is you can do an infinite number of them, right? So so do them in the way that you think might be all screwed up, and if you know Dr. Tim or Michael Rice saw this, they'd say I'm doing it all wrong. Do it that way. You're not going to hurt anybody. And then
right.
do it the way that you think that would be the perfect way, and you won't hurt anybody, and you just cancel the goal, breathe and relax, ask to be shown. Have a loving thought about yourself and do it again and do it again and do it again.
Yeah. I just find it amazing that we, you know, this self-condemnation that I find myself doing, even though I truly believe we're all actually innocent and that the things that we do should never be judged or condemned, and yet even in a dream, which, you know, a night dream, which clearly, you know, didn't happen,
and yet it is still clearly reflecting content of your own mind.
Right.
So at some level, you believe, you think consciously, logically, that we're all innocent. At that same time, there's a part of you that's filled with the programming of your family life, your interaction with friends, and your interactions with your culture that hold a different belief.
Yeah. I just find that amazing that I can hold two, like, opposite beliefs like that. And but it, I mean, it's good to understand that to work on, you know, the ones that are unconscious, because obviously they're unconscious. You can't do anything about them.
Well, but as soon as they are the strongest resonant energy in your system, they will start to drive your behavior, especially if you're not aware of them. So you can watch the behavior and see that it is in conflict with what you consciously believe and instantly know, oh, my unconscious is active. Let me use some tools to get in touch with, become aware of, and dismantle that false energy.
Yeah. Because I keep catching myself, you know, beating myself up when I forget something. And then I go, wait a minute. Well, if I forgot it, then I was obviously meant to forget it. And I have to keep catching myself doing it first. And so that's clearly, and that's what this dream is all about, you know, devastating consequences of having forgotten something. So, yeah, I guess that's the thing right now for me to work on. When I beat myself up over being forgetful.
Mm-hmm. That could be a very fruitful set of worksheets.
Yeah. Okay, but now I think I can move forward with the worksheet, because I got stuck on that, the goal, and I think I was just making it too specific. And it always works better for me when I don't get too specific, because then I'm too narrow in even, you know, like the outcome of it, where it takes me.
Yeah, and a lot of people struggle with it because they put off working through the worksheet all the way through, or even picking it up, because they're stuck in the thought pattern that says they're going to do it wrong.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about this. You know, you can't really do it wrong. You might end up doing it longer than you need to, but it's perfectly safe to just do worksheet after worksheet. It's also safe, and we had somebody in the support group last night, and it's also safe to put the worksheets away and say, you know what, they're not working for me. The more worksheets I do, the more upset I get. Okay, then try another approach. There are many people out there who are offering things that have it at their core a similar dynamic. How do we know? Because they work. And, and anything that truly works is going to be very similar to anything else that truly works. But you can just get into the deep practice of Ho'oponopono, or Byron Katie's work, or the Sedona Release Method, or Martha Creek's work out of Unity, or practice the Four Agreements, and do the EFT tapping in conjunction with any of those. And if it's, you know, if it's working for you with what you're doing, keep doing it. If it's not, feel free to just move on, find something else, and just keep pursuing that
my
peace.
Freedom.
Yeah, that comfort, that awareness of your true nature that is, you know, beyond words good. So I realize we've expired our time, so thank you so much, Ellen, for the call.
Well, thank you
for
Dr.
Tim. You're welcome. Blessings. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And welcome, everybody, to
know.
The second hour. Oh,
I just thought I'd let you know. I don't know if yes, I can hear you, but I thought I'd let you know before I go that we had a call from Cindy that was I don't know. It was not just a two-minute call, and then we had a call from Celinda, and then one from Ellen. So if you wanted to make the notes about that, there was some processing with Celinda and some processing with Cindy and some processing with Ellen all in today's call.
Awesome.
And I'll bid you adieu.
Okay, thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, May the 5th, 2021, and our call-in number, well, I'm not going to give you our call-in number because I'm going to do a pre-recorded show. Michael's on the road, and so this is Healing Our Planet Part 1, and then we'll play Part 2 either tomorrow or the next day, depending on when he gets back on with us. So please enjoy.
Right. And so if you would just kind of get quiet and take a couple of deep breaths and relax. And as you do that, notice any tension points within yourself and allow your body to relax. And as your body relaxes, imagine that each breath that you take in is bringing in peace and love. Each breath that you breathe out is releasing all tension and negativity. And with each breath, you become more and more centered in who you are. And then as all tension and negativity is released through the breath then becomes an amplifier for that love energy. So you take it in, and as you breathe out that love energy. And I'd like you to imagine an image of the globe here at the front of the room, in the center of the room. Visualize it, see it here. And as you breathe, breathe out that love energy into the globe. See that light, that love energy, a healing energy projected around the planet. Right here, front and center. And we'll just leave that globe sitting there throughout the class. And anytime you happen to think of it or attune to it, just allow your energy to be with it and be with its healing. And that's very much what I would like to talk about tonight, is the healing of the planet in connection with the Course in Miracles. So if you would just come back and keep in mind that idea of healing our planet. And of course, in healing our planet, who are we healing but ourselves? Seeing as how we are a planet, we are one with it, we are connected with it, and there's no separation from it. The thing that that stimulated me to getting into the discussion that I'm going to get into tonight is actually multi-level. 2 weeks ago, when I worked with the children in the school doing lessons in living, I found myself coming to the point of really connecting with the fact that our planet needs to be healed if the children are going to carry on. And that just came seemingly out of nowhere. And then last Thursday night in particular, for some reason or other, the whole idea of what's going on with nuclear war and things like that came up in the class, and that became the focus of most of the class. And then Saturday evening, I got a call from someone who told me about a film called Testament. Have you heard of that film? Testament, which is basically one of the anti-nuclear films, which is pretty graphic. Shows, you know, several days in the life of a family who's just John Q. average family doing everything most families do, and things, points of reference and points of identification that everybody could get into being those people. And then one morning, as the as father's busy and running off and mother's busy, they don't get to kiss goodbye, but off he goes to work. And he's got to go to San Francisco that day. They're in a small town in Southern California. And about 4 o'clock that afternoon on the radio, or on the news comes, there's been a nuclear bomb dropped on several cities in the United States. They don't know what cities yet, but several cities. And so here she is, here's mother with 3 children in a small town in Southern California. They get some of the effects of the blast, the light and such from it, but there's no immediate damage. And the rest of the story is the ensuing weeks as she wonders if and when her husband is ever going to come back, and her children one by one dying, and her burying them. And that's basically the story. And I thought it most unfortunate that the total image seemed to be one of resistance to this happening, which of course we know that what we resist, we've just given our energy to, and we in fact are reinforcing and creating it. You know, Job gave us that lesson very clearly. That which I feared most has come upon me. I realized that the fear is an amplifier of my thoughts, and as my thoughts are amplified, they become my reality, my experience. And so when, you know, and it's a really important issue because as the Course says, in the context of the illusion, it's real, it's happening, it is happening, but it is an effect of our consciousness. And until we recognize it's an effect of our consciousness, we can't change it. And unfortunately, all that happened with this film was it was shown. You know, 2 or 3 minutes of introduction, it was shown, and people just walked out of the theater like zombies, knocked unconscious. Certainly not in a position where they could act or do anything, except out of resistance, perhaps, and out of fear. And so it just seemed that it's important to start to put out the ideas that, wait a minute, folks, while this is real, it is an effect of our consciousness. And until we can start to take responsibility and change it internally, it's not going to start to change externally. And that when we will start to take responsibility for what's going on in the outer world, when we will see that the people that we've elected as leaders and the people that we've chosen to be at war with or at conflict with are really a product of our own consciousness expanded, when we will see that, you know, really what's being said to the Russians is what we're saying individually to the guy next door. Gee, if only you'd change, if only you weren't so crazy, if only you weren't so insane, everything would be all right in my life, or maybe the guy that, or the person that lives with us. And that we have externalized and externalized and externalized and externalized this message to the point where, well, it's being played on a pretty broad scale and actually is threatening. And very close to, and I believe that if we don't bring about some form of transformation, that it is going to threaten the existence of the planet, or at least the majority of life on the planet. And then in the context of the Course in Miracles, which talks about the insanity of the ego, and what's the law of the ego? Seek but never find, right? And in seeking but never finding, it's always the other guy's fault. And if we can just obliterate him, everything would be okay. If we could just get rid of if we could just do enough violence to the violent ones to get rid of them, everything would be peaceful, right? What kind of insanity is that? What does everybody want to do with the child abuser? Abuse them. But the ego thinks if they could just do enough damage to those who are doing the damage, everything would be okay. But if you think of it in terms of, let's imagine we've got a pool of water. And we say, well, what we need to do is get rid of H2O. So what we're going to do is we're going to go hook up all the hoses and turn on all the taps and pour water on it. You'd say, wait a minute. No, you just told me you want to get rid of the water. You don't want to pour water on it to get rid of the water. That would be insane. You're not going to get rid of a puddle in your driveway by pouring water in it. That's right. How do we expect to get rid of violence by doing violence to someone? Violence is an energy. It's a product of human consciousness. It's a result of where our thoughts are. And how can we possibly eradicate it by doing more violence? The insanity of the ego. And as we choose to do violence, what we do is we in fact add to that pool of violence, and the person who stands here, who happens to be attuned perhaps to a little more overt violence than we are, has what? A larger resource pool to pull from to allow that energy to flow through. And it's not until each time we find a forum where our violence comes up, we take responsibility for it and we evaporate it, we get rid of it, that that pool will shrink, and anyone who is in tune with violence, there will be less and less and less of it for them to express. Because we're all one body, we're all one being, we're all connected. And we put many out there in different parts. We project our image on someone else, and it's really our image of ourselves. So anyway, after the film, I picked up a flyer. Now, I want to be real clear about this, because I'm not looking to take a political stand. Some of what was going on was motivated politically. And I'm not looking to do that. I'm just looking to use some of these statements. Hi there. Okay. Because of what we've been moving toward in terms of the ego and its statement, you know, the ego statement, as according to the Course in Miracles, is, well, the way that I'll save myself is to destroy myself, right? That's how insane the ego is. It will actually destroy itself, thinking that by destroying itself, it will save itself. And the reverse, healing appears, and healing is seen as a threat. Because in order to heal, we've got to give something up. And we don't want to lose that we've been identified with, even if it's pain. And so these statements that were put together were just so on target from the Course in Miracles as the ultimate statements of insanity that the ego would make about life and about what we're doing, that I just couldn't help but make them part of this evening. Now, of course, we've talked over and over again about the other guy. It's always his fault, right? Everybody knows who it is that needs to straighten out for their lives to be okay, right? Notice when you point a finger, there are three fingers pointing back, always. And as we put it out there, the truth is, what we're doing is projecting our own consciousness. Well, you know, it's sort of like we're getting to the ultimate scale. We've said before that pain has its wonderful purpose. It makes your ears grow. Enough pain and you'll finally start to see and finally start to hear what it is you're doing. And when I say you, I mean you and I. I'm talking about all of us collectively, because this is a collective conspiracy. This thing of the externalization of violence, the externalization of blame, the externalization of guilt is now being played out on a planetary scale. We set it aside. When we did it to the, you know, the person in our family, we set it aside and pushed it away and repressed it. When it happened with the neighbor, we set it aside, pushed it away, and repressed it. When it happened with the boss, we set it aside, pushed it away, and repressed it. And with the community leaders, and on and on and on. Until now, it's like we're getting to the point where we can't put it off anymore. Because if we don't do something about it, the planet isn't going to be here. I mean, literally, if you go back and look at every prophecy from societies thousands of years apart and thousands of miles apart, the next 20 years is pinpointed as the time of transformation, the time of change, or the time of purification, whichever we choose to make it. It is up to us to choose what we wish to do with it. Our free will does not include that something will or will not happen. Our free will is that we can shape what's going to happen. Not that we're going to do it. There is a power within us. There is a power that flows through us that's going to shape it all. Or pardon me, is going to do it all. But we, having been given dominion over the physical plane, have been given choice. Our free will, our power of choice, is the ability to shape the way the shadows are going to fall, the way the effects are going to happen. Right now, as it's flowing, it looks like the effect's going to be pretty tragic. But no more tragic than what we're doing to ourselves on an individual level. And what we need to do individually and collectively is to take hold of that thing we've called consciousness, take charge of it and shape it so that the shadows fall in harmony with the light. If I hold my hand up, you see a shadow on the board. What's the source of the shadow? My hand, the light. It's not my hand. That up there is the source of the shadow. My hand simply determines the shape of it. My free will includes only that I can shape what that shadow is, not that it's going to fall. As the Course says, you were born a creator. You are going to create. If the only thoughts you can hold in your mind are those of fear, those of hate, those of anger, then you will create fear, hate, and anger, and you can't stop that process. But you can reshape it. You can't not create. You are a creator. We all are creators. And the light, the source of the shadow, interacting with our hand determines the shape of it. I can make of it a peace sign. I can make of it a fist. That's as far as my free will goes. Now, my hand in this analogy is my thoughts. Our thoughts about life, our thoughts about the world, our thoughts about our neighbor. That's why Christ's whole process, why the Course in Miracles' whole process is forgiveness, is because your thoughts are the energy that shapes the shadow, that shapes the interaction with the neighbor, although it now seems to be independent. It's like, yes, there's the shadow, and we've cut ourselves, we don't like the shadow, and we've cut ourselves off from our hand in order not to look at the fact that we're responsible for the shadow. And it's only forgiveness. It's only the ability to go in and start to change our thoughts. That word forgive meaning to cancel, to let go, to untie, to cancel the thoughts that have shaped the effects in our lives that are going to change it. But of course, again, the ultimate statement of the ego is it's all them. Well, here we've got it now on an international scale said by the leader of our country. We have a different regard for human life than those monsters the Soviets do. Now, take that down on a mini scale. Have you ever heard yourself saying something like that about the guy next door, or the guy across town, or the guy in another church, or the guy in another religion, or the guy in another color, or race, or creed, or whatever? The Soviet Union underlies all the unrest that is going on. If they weren't engaged in this game of dominoes, there wouldn't be any hot spots in the world. Does it sound familiar? Have we all said that about somebody, somewhere, because we know who is to blame? And we think with attack, we think with violence that we can change that. We'll just be a bigger bully than they. But what have we done? We've added to the pool of energy that is a resource. And that's where Christ said, if you are not with me, you are against me. If you are not going to do the forgiveness process, then you're contributing to the pool of negativity. You're contributing to the pool of anger, the pool of fear, the pool of hatred, the pool of violence. Because it's an energy. We've lost sight of that. Because we've cut ourselves off from what forms the shadow, trying to pretend that we have no responsibility. But it's only ultimately as we will take full responsibility that we can change that. And then what does the ego say? I'm going to win even if I have to lose to do it. If I have to destroy myself to do it, I'm going to win. So let's listen to what the director of the Emergency Management Agency says. Nuclear war would be a terrible mess, but it wouldn't be unmanageable. Secretary of Defense, dig a hole, cover it with a couple of doors, and then throw 3 or 4 feet of dirt on top. It's the dirt that does it. If there are enough shovels to go around, everybody's going to make it through a nuclear war. Now, I'm not sure who he was planning on putting the last few shovels of dirt on top. Maybe he was going to go around and do that for everybody. I don't know. But and then let's listen to NATO's policy stated by the Secretary of Defense. We will fight a war with conventional weapons until we are losing. We will then fight the war with tactical nuclear weapons until we are losing. Then we'll blow the world up. That's a quote. I mean, talk about the perfect expression of the externalization of the ego's thoughts, and there it is. And that just gives us some idea of what it is that we need to heal in order to change that energy. The parts of ourselves, if we've ever heard ourselves saying anything akin to that on any scale, it doesn't have to be something big. The minute, the minor irritations for most people underneath their bubbling cauldrons that they've learned to suppress because it's not allowed, and the cauldron now is bubbling on an international scale. But it's our little contribution that brings that about. And so there's a twofold process of healing that happens when we choose to take responsibility. The first segment of that is, if I choose to handle, you know, the part that I've contributed to the pool, then there's going to be that much less in the pool. And two, what happens? Think about it. Have you ever had the experience of being in a really heavy, negative space? Fearful, angry, hating, whatever. And then found somebody that you could attune to that was very loving. And when you were able to open to them, the fear, the hate, and the anger seemed to dissipate. You see, love is a higher, more powerful vibration than hate and fear and anger. And as such, it penetrates and dissolves it. It transmutes it. So when we handle our own violence, not only are we not contributing to the pool, but all of a sudden our vehicle, our instrument is opened up to be a channel to bring through the exact thing that will heal it. And that's what Christ was talking about when he said a little leavening will go a long way. That's the story of the 100 monkeys. That it won't take many of us that will say, okay, I see that out there, and I'm willing to take responsibility for it in here and change it in here. And each one of those will become a vehicle that will change the energy of the planet. The 144,000 that were to be lifted up in the end times were not, you know, 144,000 bodies that were going to be taken off the planet while Christ wiped out everybody they didn't like and then set back down again. I believe it was more like an intuitive sense that when the ultimate externalization of the ego's violence comes, it will take something in the range of that number of people who are committed to taking responsibility and doing inner work, not outer work. Inner work first. Yes, outer work comes with it, but first comes the inner work. The unreformed reformer doesn't do one bit of good because while they speak one set of words with their mouths, their hearts are contributing a totally different energy to the situation. A house divided against itself can't stand. And that truly is a house divided against itself. And so each of us, ultimately, if we're going to bring about that transformation, must become a vehicle for that transformation. Both in the way of healing our own contribution and bringing in a new quality of contribution to the planetary energies. And I believe if we really open up and look at it, we're getting some pretty good signals from the planet that it's time. You know, there's so many signals. I mean, it's a couple of volcanoes in Hawaii hadn't gone off in 100 years. What, within a month of each other, Mount St. Helens and a couple of those went off. There's some of the signals that said, time's here, folks. The turmoil, this pool of violence, is becoming so powerful that it's not only creating unrest between nations, but it's affecting the physical planet. And there's one theory, a book called the Gaia experiment, where there was a NASA scientist who developed the instrumentation to test whether or not there was life on Venus when they sent that space shot out there. So they set all the criteria, set up all the scientific data. Here's the instrumentation that will test it. And he decided to try it on Earth. And according to all of the standards set by NASA, Earth is a living being. And according to this one person's theory, we're probably the nervous system. The planet is about to have a nervous breakdown. And we're the contributors. And until we handle the energy that we're channeling into it, it's not going to change, and it's going to get more crisis and more crisis and more crisis-oriented until we listen or eradicate ourselves from the planet. And so along with external action, I would like to propose that we think in terms of the same curriculum as laid out in the Course in Miracles. And the same curriculum starts out by saying, only love is strong because it is undivided. It is the only thing that is not divided. How often do we, or have we been trained, and have we seen it happen? For instance, it happens very commonly in religions. Someone comes along in the name of a man called Jesus and says, I'm here to love you. And if you won't accept my love, I'll kill you. Now, if that isn't a house divided against itself, I don't know what is. And yet we've blocked that. And, you know, I mean, in the name of one who was able to. And you know, if you're going to blame somebody, think about Jesus hanging on the cross, you know, nails in hands and feet, getting ready for spear inside, holes in head from thorns. If you're going to put out a judgment, they're doing it to me, that's got to be a pretty good posture to do it from. Didn't. Really think about that. He didn't buy into it. Now, one of the things that's said in the Course in Miracles is you are subject only to what you hold in mind. He refused to judge by appearances. Now, that's a pretty strong appearance. And you say, well, boy, he really goofed up because look at that. They killed him. Oh, did they? Not the book I read about him, they didn't. They killed his body. But his awareness did not die with it because he did not buy into the appearance. Now, that's going to sound insane to the ego. But is that any more insane than, well, when we're failing at tactical nuclear weapons, we'll blow up the world? He didn't buy into it, and in so doing, not holding the thought in mind that he could be killed, although they were killing his body, he was able to stay alive, he was able to stay awake spiritually, and he was able to reconstitute his body. That's a powerful statement for not buying into appearances. Now, a lot of people are still back there hanging out with the death, never realizing that the death was just a story to show us that you didn't have to buy into it. Death, where is thy sting? To he that overcomes, he shall not taste of death. Now, most everybody's still hanging around saying, well, yeah, but you got to die for that to happen. But wait a minute. Said he will not taste of death. Well, yeah, but you got to die first. So, no, that wasn't a prerequisite. If you do not engage, and it's really sad, it's really unfortunate that these principles have been made religious principles, and they've been misused to the point where you just mention the name God, you mention the name Jesus, you mention the word Christ, and people run the other way. Because the true principles by which we operate and by which we create have all been suppressed by the ego in the name of religion, only too often. But think about, how can you say, I'm here to love you, and I'll kill you if you don't accept it? The mind is this, you know, here we are, the shadow. The shadow can only be one shape at a time. I can show a peace symbol, I can show a fist. I can only do one at a time. I can't put them both through at once. It's like a projector. You can't put a movie of ugliness and a movie of beauty through at the same time and get clarity on either one of them. A house divided against itself cannot operate. That was a spiritual principle, not a religious principle. And if we hold in our hearts violence, if we hold in our hearts hatred, if we hold in our hearts anger, and we don't know how to forgive, we don't know how to release, we don't know how to cancel that and let go of that energy, and we go around talking about love, what are we? What are we doing? Setting up somebody out there to blame. And until we take responsibility, we can't heal it. And it's time to let that energy come up. Yes, the movie, the Testament was an incredible thing for bringing it up. But then what happened with it? Nothing. That energy was up for everybody in that theater, and people just walked out like zombies. When instead that whole energy could have been turned around, and instead of driving people into unconsciousness, they could have been brought up into a transformative state. And unfortunately, every time that something like that is done, there's more determined energy put into the fact that if we continue in that direction, nuclear war will be inevitable. Because our resistance turns our power over. We've forgotten the basic fact that we're creators. And when Christ talked about, let thine eye be single and thy body will be filled with light, he was saying, this world is a light organization. It's a certain state of organized beams of light. And when you focus your eye, which he meant your mind, your consciousness, on one thing to the exclusion of all others, that will form the light. That will set up the structure which will appear as the physical world to you. And the ego says, well, I know what I don't want, so I'll keep an eye on it. In fact, it's so totally sucked in and absorbed by what it doesn't want that its eye is filled with it and its body manifests it. And our body is not just our little physical 149 pounds. It's the planet. It's our brother. That's our body. Our body is the body of Christ. The body of Christ isn't the body of a man named Jesus. It is that mystical body. It is that over body that we are all a part of, that we are each a cell in, and we have our input to it. And if we become a cancer to the body, as with any body, there will be a casing put around it, and the body will destroy it. That's what's going to happen with this planet. If we become a cancer in the body, in that unfathomable being, the book the scientists wrote was called The Gaia Experiment. We saw Earth as a living being. We a cell in the being. If we become a cancer, we'll eliminate ourselves. One of the reasons for the proliferation of so much cancer on the planet is not just the nuclear energy that's happening. It's got to do with what we're putting into our bodies in the way of those thought energies that are reflecting as violence in the world, that are externalizing as that violence. And only love is strong because it is undivided. The strong do not attack because they see no need to do so. Who attacks? Only the ego when it feels helpless. Before the idea of attack can enter your mind, you must have perceived yourself as being weak. Because you attacked yourself and believed that the attack was effective, you behold yourself as weakened. No longer perceiving yourself and your brothers as equal and regarding yourself as weaker, you attempt to equalize the situation you made with those tools of the ego, of the negativity and the fear. You use attack to do so because you believe that attack was successful in weakening you. The first step in healing this is the recognition of your own invulnerability. This is the key to the restoration of your sanity. You say, wait a minute, what do you mean invulnerability? Well, we had one very good demonstrator who knew of his invulnerability. And when they hung him on a cross, he didn't buy the appearance. And they weren't able to kill him. In your spiritual essence, you are invulnerable. Absolutely invulnerable. The effect you create is vulnerable, but only to your consciousness. The external world, the world that we would call the actual world, the world of actuality, can seem to be very threatening. The world of reality is an individual process. Each of us will go out of here tonight with a different reality. Somebody may go out talking about how I spoke about what you should do politically, someone else this, someone else that. Each one will experience a different reality, but we're all going out to the same world of actuality. And we say, the world of actuality is threatening. And I say, the world of actuality is not threatening if in reality you are safe. Is it on there now? I just switched it off to ask you that question. Okay. So the world of actuality is safe if in reality you are. Think about the shadow again. My hand is the reality, the shadow is the actuality. It's an effect, it's an illusion. Illusion doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Yes, it does exist, it's real, but it's a real effect of what your consciousness has set up. And we need to become conscious of how we're forming the shadow. We need to become conscious of how we're setting up the effect, because actuality is an effect of a creator, and we are the creative beings made in the image and likeness. The image might bespeak of the light that comes from behind my hand in order to form the shadow. Yes, we're in the direct flow and we don't have any choice about that, but we can reshape by learning to let go of what we've been impregnated with about how they're so terrible and the fears. We can change the shape of the actuality by changing the shape of the reality that we've chosen here. That is why the recognition of your own invulnerability is so important to the restoration of your sanity. For if you accept your invulnerability, could someone just close that door over so we don't have a clicking door? If you accept your invulnerability, you are recognizing that attack has no effect. Although you have attacked yourself, you will be demonstrating that nothing really happened. And notice, the only one that can attack you, the only way that attack energy can enter your field from the actuality is if you set it up in reality. How was that said? As you sow, you reap. As you measure, so it will be measured unto you. Judge not, lest you be judged, for he who judges is guilty of exactly what he has judged another of. They're pretty clear statements, so take it all back home. Therefore, by attacking, you have not done anything. Now that may sound a little bit insane again. It sounds rather conflicting. Although you have attacked yourself, you will be demonstrating that nothing really happened. Is that shadow anything? Really? Is it anything? It's just an absence of light, right? We can set up attack from within. And how do we do that? We do that by holding defense thoughts. We can set up those thoughts, and therefore the shadow will appear to do something to us. In reality, it doesn't do anything to us. It just reflects what we've set up. So in reality, nothing has happened. Even though the world of actuality attacked, crucified, and killed the body of the Christ, he did not buy into it, and therefore, he didn't die. So although something happened to him, the truth was it had no effect on him. It affected his body. Now we think perhaps we're weak and powerless and say, well, boy, I sure wouldn't want that to happen to me. What would happen? What would I do? But are we really here in a body for everything that the physical world has told us it's about? Or are we really here to learn of our spiritual essence? And are we really here to force ourselves? You know, we've procrastinated. We put it off. We put off opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to let go of our violence. And so now it's facing us. There's nowhere on the planet you can go that you're not going to deal with it. So you are going to deal with it. So have we been faced as spiritual beings, as creative beings, to reach into another level, into another dimension that so far is unconceived of? To bring it into this plane. Have we created enough stress on ourselves? You know, it's like, gee, it's a deadline. You know, I'm going to cram all night because I got an exam tomorrow. Anybody remember doing that? Well, we better start cramming for the exam. It was an interesting film on a while back on the Star Trek program. And what's his name? Mr. Spock, Captain Kirk, or find an energy with a strange, or a planet with a strange energy, and they decide to land and find out what's going on there, so they get beamed down. And all of a sudden, once they get there, their ship is cut off from them. They can't, there's no power to beam them back up, so they're stuck on this planet. And they meet Abraham Lincoln. And all of a sudden, there are three bad guys from history. And they're on a planet, they find out, a planet of creatures that are able to transform their bodies into any form they want. They're standing there talking about what they're going to do, and this rock turns into one of these beings. And says to them, well, you're here because we found this rather unusual planet called Earth, where they have this thing called good and evil. We don't know much about it, but we want to learn. So we decided to set up a test to see which was stronger. We've been studying this good and evil thing, and we don't know which is stronger. So we decided to set up a test. So we've taken you three, Abraham Lincoln, Spock, who of course is the super peace man, right, and Captain Kirk, as a representation of the highest and most peaceful beings, the good force, and in enters the bad guys, three of the real despicable historical creatures, you know, the Genghis Khan types. And they're pitted against each other. And he says to Spock, the only way that you, or this creature says, the only way that you can get back to your ship and prevent us from destroying it is by doing interaction with these bad guys. And whoever comes out on top will be restored. So they don't have much choice. And they get, you know, they do their, you know, Spock wants to be peaceful and he's going to be peaceful. And finally they end up, they don't have any choice it seems, but they go to war with each other. And Abraham Lincoln gets killed and I forget who it is that kills one or two of the other guys and the others just run off. And so all of a sudden the creature appears again and says, well, you win. You get to go back to your ship. However, we're very disappointed in you. I said, why? We won. That's what you wanted, isn't it? He said, well, we thought we'd learn something. But it seems that on your planet Earth, good and evil use the same tools, so what's the difference? Maybe it's time for us to reach through to another dimension and bring through something new. Maybe it's time to bring through something besides human resistance and human fear and human violence. And maybe we've set this up specifically as an expression of our consciousness to give us the impetus to stop putting it off and reach through to that other level and bring it in. How many of us will be motivated by it before our little scenario catches us and it's too late? How many times have I seen people who've set their bodies up to die, who've set the diseases in motion, and when they become conscious of it, they are so weakened, they just say, I just can't do anything about it. I know what I did. I know what I have to do to reverse it, and I don't have the energy left. Don't put it off till crisis point. Don't put it off till the very last minute. It's getting pretty close. According to the scientists who've set up the nuclear clock, which the history of the planet Earth is a 24-hour period, we're now about 8 minutes to midnight. the day is just about over. How many of us are going to wait till a minute to midnight to take action? And I'm talking primarily now about the inner action. Yes, the outer action is important, but the inner action is what's going to make the transformation. Once again, the recognition of your own invulnerability is the key to the restoration of your sanity. Although you've attacked yourself, you'll be demonstrating that nothing really happened. Therefore, by attacking, you have not done anything. Once you realize this, you will no longer see any sense in attack, for manifestly it does not work and it cannot protect you. And Christ said, do not judge by appearances. Thing it sees all the meaning that it has, and only it can change it for itself. And fortunately, when enough of us will choose to change it, then that leavening will change the whole planetary energy. We don't have to go out and convert every violent one to be peaceful. I mean, God, how long have we each been studying this to get to the point of realizing there's actually something you can do about it? Maybe years. Are we going to get somebody like a Gaddafi to sit still long enough to hear it? Is he going to spend 10 years sitting in a Course in Miracles class? Good luck. Fortunately, we don't have to do that. We have a higher energy at our disposal. We have a higher vibration that is the leavening, that if we will bring it into our being, it will leaven and change the energy of the whole planet. The unconscious ones that just tune into the pool of energy and spit it out at us only spit out what we put out. It's only a reflection. And when we will take that responsibility and clean this up, then the unconscious ones will send back exactly what we're sending out. And when the scale tips, and that doesn't mean that we have to match the negative energy, because the higher vibration is always more powerful and more penetrating. The radio wave comes through these walls, but if I line the walls with tin, it doesn't come through anymore, because that vibration, that energy field, is not powerful or penetrating enough to go through the tin. But if I step it up and I put an X-ray there, it sure will come through, won't it? Because it's a higher vibration, a more refined energy, and that so-called physical matter is mostly space, organized in a form. And that X-ray comes through that form called tin, but if we put an eighth of an inch of lead there, all of a sudden it will be stopped. So the higher vibration, love, will always penetrate and transform the lower, alter its structure. So we don't have to go out and change everybody. The biggest favor we can do the planet is to do the change in ourselves and for ourselves. That will become the leavening that will do the work. The recognition of your invulnerability has more than just a negative value. If your attacks on yourself have failed to weaken you, you are still strong. You therefore have no need to equalize the situation to establish your strength. You see, your strength has always been there. It always will be there. You can't get rid of your strength. It's there. In fact, in order to hold on to weakness, that saps your strength. The natural state of the human being is to be a creator, to be powerful, to be attuned to the source of his strength. And covering it up with all that junk, all the limiting thoughts and limiting feelings, it takes a lot of energy to hold those in and prevent the natural rush of the creative thrust, to prevent the aliveness from flowing through, takes killing yourself. Now, some people do it on the installment plan. It's done step by step. But it's done just the same. So if you will realize your strength is there, all you need to do is uncover the junk that covers it up. And your strength will come through automatically. Love is not something you do, it's something you are. Let go of everything unlike love and that energy will naturally flow through you. But every time we put a restricting thought, we close the valve down. The more restricted, the more limited the thought, the more limited the flow of that energy that can come through it until finally we cut ourselves off. That's the separation. We've got to start to open that valve up because there is an infinite source of power. There is an infinite supply. And when we will open up the infinite valve, it will come through us. How else was someone like Christ or any of the other masters able to reach and touch someone and totally transform them? Because they'd opened their valve, they'd let go of the limitations, they'd cleaned out their store. They'd taken responsibility. And yes, there's a stage where taking responsibility looks like you're going to lose something, looks like you have to give something up. But the reward of doing it is so much greater. You will never realize the utter uselessness of attack except by recognizing that your attack on yourself has no effects. For others do react to attack if they perceive it. And if you are trying to attack them, you will be unable to avoid interpreting this as reinforcement. When we will stop allowing this idea of attack to be reinforced and therefore making it real. Attack is not real. It's an illusion. Now I'm ready to get crazy. Attack is real. I mean, it's out there. It's real. We can see it. It happens to us. Well, there you go sounding crazy again. No. It's a real effect. We set it up, and yes, it's external, and yes, it appears real, but it only appears real because we've energized it. It is only real because we've given it the reality, the meaning that it has. And when we extract our power from it, rather than resisting it and trying to push it away and resisting it, think of the energy dynamic. We got a car sitting here, we want to move it. I've got a lot of energy and I'm going to push the car and I get it rolling and I stop. I dissipated all that energy and lost it, right? I didn't lose any energy. Energy can't be destroyed. What happened to the energy? The car's got it. It's rolling. It's going to be used up in friction and heat and all of those things. Not one iota of energy has been lost. Not one iota of anger is ever lost. Every idle word will be accounted for. Every idle thought will create its shadow. And when we take responsibility for our shadows, we can heal the planet. And if only one of us could truly, totally do it, the whole planet would transform. When you replace your thoughts of attack and your thoughts of fear and your thoughts of weakness and your thoughts of powerless, with a thought like, my connection to divinity is strong enough to bring about a world of unending peace, then you will become a force for peace. And when that is the only thought you make real in your consciousness, when that is the only thought you energize with your creative essence, when you will enlist support for that thought in a constructive manner, then we will have a world of peace because we are going to have to shape the shadow. We are going to have to create it. And you don't create it by trying to avoid what you don't want. Think about all the things you didn't want in your life as a child. Think about them for a minute. If you haven't handled them, are you still living with them? They're getting bigger than life every year. Why is this happening to me again? Because we've resisted what we don't want. It's time for us to receive what we don't want, to accept what we don't want so that we can heal it. And that means to accept that part of us that is violent, to accept that part of us that is negative, to accept that part of us that is fearful. Not to hang out with it and make it the reality, but to heal it. That's the only way we can do it. The only place that you can cancel out all reinforcement of attack is in yourself. For you are always the first point of your attack. we think we're doing it to somebody else, right? Not going to get into it, but if you're familiar with kinesiology, there's a thing called muscle testing. And all you need to do is have somebody stand up, do a muscle test on them, get them to show their strong point, and then get them to think a negative thought, and watch what happens. Their strength is zapped. It doesn't matter who they're thinking with. They could be thinking about the thought about somebody that doesn't even exist. They can be thinking the thought about something that hasn't even happened. And their body goes weak. Now, if you've got to think negative thoughts, do yourself a favor and think about something that hasn't happened, about somebody that doesn't exist, and at least in that energy connection, you won't be tying yourself into somebody. But if you start judging and thinking the negative thought about the guy next door, it's like writing him a letter. He gets the carbon copy, you keep the original. If he's not home, you get the letter back. Fortunate. Because if he's home and accepts delivery, you are on an energy level tied and locked into him until one or the other or both of you work that dynamic out. For life. For lifetimes. For eternity. Until you work it out. That's the power of energy. Every idle word will be accounted for. There is no such thing as an idle thought. Oh, well, it was just a little judgment about him. It's just a little negativity. Doesn't matter. You just hooked in. You just locked in. They're receiving only the carbon. Your energy field, and it's very demonstrable, your energy field is receiving the original and the effect of the original. That's how we kill our bodies, our energy field. And it's become so normal, well, that's just the way life proceeds, or pardon me, death. Death is a natural thing. Go back to Corinthians. With man, death originated. God didn't create us to die. We've got an immortal energy field. If we take it apart piece by piece, that's our problem. The thing itself, 10,000, 100,000, 100 million years from now, even if tomorrow the planet blows up, the thing itself is going to exist in some way, shape, or form as an energy field, which it is now. It is not a body. And until we see that, we're not going to understand the dynamics of the qualities of energy that we put in that cause and bring about its destruction or disease state, which had become so totally normal that death is just, well, it's part of the scene, you know? It's acceptable. To he that overcomes, he will not taste of death. You can scatter the components of your body all over the planet. You won't be dead. You may not have much awareness of your existence. You see, as an energy, we can't be created nor destroyed. In the beginning was the power. Always has been, always will be. In the real world, there is no end. Being an immortal being, you always have been. The only thing that is altering or changing is your awareness of it. We're here in a body on planet Earth right now to build our awareness as spiritual beings. To build awareness of our immortal existence. Then we can go on from kindergarten. Right now, it's all kindergarten stuff. The mind of man is not yet conceived. There's no idea what's going on, really going on out there. But as long as we hang out with our tunnel vision and our little fears and our little petty stuff, we're not going to get to see it. You have always been the first point of your attack. And if this has never been, it has no consequences. The Holy Spirit's love is your strength. And holy doesn't mean get down on your hands and knees and praise. It means pray. It means whole, total, all-encompassing. Attuned to the wholeness of your being. This whole planet is your body. The essence that permeates this wholeness when you attune to it is called being in tune with the Holy Spirit. Nothing mystical, nothing religious. Another sad fact that's been so misused that you mention Holy Spirit and people kind of look at you a little weird and want to go the other way. The Holy Spirit's love is your strength, for yours is divided and therefore not real. You cannot trust your own love when you attack it. You cannot learn of perfect love with a split mind because a split mind has made itself a poor learner. You tried to make the separation eternal because you wanted to retain the characteristics of creation, but with your own content. Oh, doesn't that sound like the story of Lucifer? God made him the highest angel, and then he tried to take over. I don't need you, God. That's exactly what the ego, that's just the story of the ego. Our ego wants to supplant the creative power. And just because we've been given the ability to form the shadow, we want to think we're the source of the shadow. I mean, think about it. We were given the gift of creation. We were given dominion. We were given the ability to determine how the shadow is going to fall. And that wasn't good enough for the ego. The ego wants to go back and be the light too.